WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this hump day. That's right, it is Wednesday, January 20th, 2016, and we, as always, have a hot show in store for you all this hour from 1 to 2 p.m. Today, we invite Mike Wilson, Michigan State sports reporter for 247sports.com, Spartan Tailgate. He will break down what he sees, what he foresees, I should say, that is going to happen tonight at the Breslin Center, the Michigan State men's basketball team trying to shake off back-to-back losses as they get it on like Donkey Kong against the Nebraska Cornhuskers tonight. He will give us a game preview of that. He'll also break down the Michigan State football team as Mark D'Antonio, of course, held his end-of-the-season press conference last week. Mike was in attendance, and he also even spoke to a few of the Michigan State football early enrollees. So he'll give us a breakdown of that and also talk about this Detroit Cass Tech offensive lineman Michael Onwenu situation. That is pretty intriguing. You don't want to miss that. We will also give you a full recap of last night's Michigan State women's basketball game as they took on Rutgers, a big win for Susie Merchant and her squad. You get to hear from her in just a sec. Also, we'll talk about the juicy story that concerns the world of tennis and fixing matches within the sport. All of that, as well as we'll be giving away two tickets to tonight's Michigan State-Nebraska basketball game. Find out how you can win in just a sec. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, Lansing Catholic senior quarterback Tony Poljan. He will be taking his talents to Central Michigan University. Poljan decommitted from Minnesota in November after Minnesota coach Tracy Clays, who took over after Jerry Kill announced his retirement, said that offensive coordinator Matt Limegrover and quarterbacks coach Jim Zebrowski would not return to the program next season. The football and basketball star had offers from Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan, Buffalo, and Toledo, and chose football over basketball in what many people speculate to be really the prime reason he decided to take his talents to Central Michigan University is because he wants to play the quarterback position. Gotta love that. All right, just some of your big performers from last night's boys and girls high school hoop action. Brandon Allen from Hazlitt, the senior point guard, had 26 points in the Hazlitt Vikings 62-59 loss to Portland. Jamiron Jackson from Lansing Everett, he had 21 points, including 19 in the second half to pace the Vikings in a 58-55 win over Okemos. C.J. Pruitt of Okemos, he scored 19 points for the Chiefs in that loss to Everett. Cole Cleaver of Williamston, he led the Hornets with 21 points in a 79-56 victory over Owosso. And Quentin Armstrong for Holt, the senior forward, he scored 20 points in the Rams' 49-48 win over Jackson in girls high school basketball last night. Lindsey Smith of Langsburg, the senior, had a career-high 27 points to lead the Wolfpack to a 54-20 victory over Portland St. Patrick. Maddie Waters of Williamson, the sophomore, had 26 points in the Hornets' 75-27 win over Owosso. Autumn Kinsman of Mason, the junior center, had 24 points and 10 rebounds in a loss to Hastings. And Grace Haley of Lansing Christian, she scored 19 points and had 12 boards in a 44-34 loss to Stockbridge. All great performances last night from those individuals. Ariel Powers, she scored 10 of her 18 points in the fourth. And number 21, Michigan State women's basketball team, they closed the game on a 19-4 run to beat Rutgers 59-48 on Tuesday night at the Breslin Center. Tyler Scaife, she led Rutgers with 24 points. She was fantastic last night. The Spartans will now head to number 5 Maryland on Saturday at 2 p.m. at the Xfinity Center. The Terrapins are in a three-way tie for first place with Ohio State and Purdue with matching 5-1 records. The Michigan State men's basketball team, they will host Nebraska as the Spartans look to snap a two-game losing streak. The Huskers come to East Lansing as one of the hottest teams in the Big Ten, winners of their last three games by, get this, double figures. Michigan State leads the all-time series with Nebraska at 12-8. Tip time is set for 6:30 p.m. tonight at the Brez. Find out how you can win a pair of tickets to tonight's game in just a sec. We will have a trivia question coming your way. Former Michigan Wolverines coach Lloyd Carr is expected to be one of the four new college football playoff selection committee members announced later this week. Carr was one of about 6 to 8 finalists considered by the college football playoff after all 10 FBS commissioners and Notre Dame athletic director Jay Swarbrick were invited to submit candidates. Carr declined to comment on this story. The Detroit Red Wings, they look to shake off a Sunday loss to the Philadelphia Flyers this past Sunday when they host the St. Louis Blues tonight at 8 p.m. The Wings currently have a 23-14-8 record, good for second place in the Atlantic Division. Defenseman Nicholas Cronwall is out 2 to 4 weeks after arthroscopic surgery on his knee Tuesday. Coach Jeff Blashill told the Red Wings website it's been a lingering issue and is the same knee Cronwall had scoped a few years ago. The Detroit Pistons are also in action tonight, looking to bounce back from that loss to the Chicago Bulls on MLK Day, hitting the road to take on James Harden and the Houston Rockets. The Pistons have allowed 104.5 points per game in their last four after giving up 91.2 over a five-game span. They held Houston to 39.8% shooting on November 30th, a game in which the Pistons did win at home. And last but not least, the Eagles have hired former Detroit Lions coach Jim Schwartz to be their defensive coordinator. Schwartz was the first assistant brought in by new head coach Doug Peterson. He last coached in 2014 as Buffalo's defensive coordinator. He took this past season off. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in to be a part of the show. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You can also go to facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. Without further ado, time to start the show.
At 8 points entering the fourth quarter, what did Rutgers do to sort of slow her down throughout much of that game, and what opened up in the fourth?
Well, I thought they were really physical with her. You know, Ariel would drive, and, you know, I don't know. I think when you get hit with the body in the new rules and the way you hand check somebody 94 feet from the basket, that's a foul. You know, I thought she just kind of had a different look in her eye like she did against Iowa down the stretch. And, you know, that's what great players do. They find ways to make baskets when your team needs them.
Well, I think she started taking it to the basket more. She has the ability to get to the rim really anytime she wants, get her shot off anytime she wants. It's just a matter of getting to the rim and getting some easy layups for her. They weren't calling as much fouls as we expected, so she had to do a good job of just finishing and not expect a foul.
I guess you just know that it's winning time, I guess, you know. Just starting to try to take over and make sure your team gets a win, honestly. Our defense level raised up a lot in the second half, too, so that helped. Just knowing how tough they are, how tough they can be. You know, they have some really big girls in there, and then their shooting guards get to the rack, too, or pull up jumpers. Just trying to match them just so, you know, honestly, playing them honest and just trying to get the win is easy as possible. I mean, it wasn't pretty, but we won, so.
Yes, and that is how we start today's current sports. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin. We've got a great show in store for all of you out there. Again, folks, we are taking your calls. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Later on in the show, we'll be inviting for the first time here on Current Sports, Mike Wilson, who is a Michigan State sports reporter for 247sports.com. He does one outstanding job. Mike is going to give us a preview of tonight's Michigan State men's basketball game as they will host Nebraska, trying to shake off a back-to-back, just bad stretch of basketball form, folks. Back-to-back losses in the Big Ten Conference. Looking to get back on track tonight. And, folks, we are giving away a pair of tickets to tonight's game. Again, tip time is at 6:30 p.m. And, again, we've been doing this throughout the entire MSU men's and women's basketball year. Giving away a pair of tickets, you could be that lucky one to check out the Spartans tonight. And, again, we make you earn them on the show. We don't just give them away, you know, to, like, caller number eight. You say, hey, you're caller number eight, and you got the tickets. No. We make you guys earn them. And I'm going to pose this right now. The first caller to call in to answer this question correctly. And I want you guys to really know the foe, because Nebraska is pretty hot right now. Pretty hot right now. They've actually won their last three straight games. Three straight. Dating back to January 9th, the beginning of the month. I want you guys to name which teams in order that Nebraska have beaten in this three-game stretch, and also give me the score of each dub. Again, name the last three teams that Nebraska has beaten in order, dating from the first to second to the third, and give me the final scores of each of those games. The first caller to call in with that correct answer will win a pair of tickets to check out the Michigan State men's basketball team as they host the Nebraska Cornhuskers tonight at the Breslin Center. But what you just heard during that montage where you guys are calling in, let's talk about the MSU women's basketball team, because they have been on a roll, ladies and gents. They sit right now at 14-4, 5-2 in the Big Ten Conference, just a half game in back of the lead in the Big Ten Conference. They have been playing just lights-out basketball right now. Very impressive what Susie Merchant and her team has really been able to produce throughout this year. And a big part of it has to do with this team staying healthy and this team being as deep as it is. And it helps when you have arguably the best basketball player in the entire Big Ten Conference in Ariel Powers. She really struggled, though, last night. I was at that game and covered it. And Ariel Power, she actually entered the fourth quarter with just 8 points. Very uncharacteristic for her. And a lot of that has to do in part to the outstanding defensive team that is Rutgers. You know, see Vivian Stringer. I mean, man, and she's a legendary coach in the realm of women's college basketball. But, man, I mean, you always know with a Stringer team, they are going to play tough, gritty defense. And that's exactly what we saw last night. A very physical game. Very, very physical game. And actually, Michigan State sort of played into the hands of Rutgers, because that's what they want. They want it to be a low-scoring, grind-out game. And usually when that happens, Rutgers ends up with a dub. But Michigan State really gave Rutgers a taste of its own medicine last night. Michigan State was absolutely fantastic. They held Rutgers to just 48 points, which is almost 20 points below their game-by-game average. Very impressive defense from the side of the Spartans when they needed it most, because there were multiple moments throughout that game in which Rutgers, I thought, were going to pull away. Michigan State really reeling, trying to search for some sort of offense. Again, their best player in Ariel Powers struggling from the field. She finished 7 of 21. Again, 8 points entering the fourth, and then the fourth occurred, and she just went absolutely out of her mind. She scored 10 points. She was 4 of 5 from the field in that fourth quarter. Talk about efficient, huh? And this is one thing that I've noticed about Susie's team this year, is that this team, even though there may be a rough patch during the game and it may be a gritty defensive battle, but at the same time, this team does not disappear. Point blank, period. And especially when it comes to their best personnel. You know, they have like a three-headed monster this season when it comes to Ariel Powers, Tori Jankowska, and now Brandi Agee. Thank goodness she's healthy, right? She has made a huge difference when it comes to the success of this ball club this year. Brandi Agee was actually 3 of 9. She finished with 10 points, 7 boards last night. Tori Jankowska, she pitched in 15 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. They were fantastic. Fantastic last night. They were fantastic when their team needed them to be fantastic. And going back to my original point about, you know, this team not disappearing, throughout the game, if Michigan State is struggling, you won't see them hanging their heads. They have such a short memory, possession by possession. And that's what I really saw last night. Even though Rutgers, you know, they bought Michigan State into really playing their game last night. And a big shout out to Tyler Scaife. Man, she is one of the best players in the conference, let alone the nation. When talking about her overall game, she was 9 of 20 last night, and she finished with 24 points. But the good thing is that Scaife was really the only player when it comes to offensive production. She was the only player on that roster who scored in double digits. She was really the only thorn in Michigan State's side offensively. 24 points for her, 4 assists. And she finished with also 3 rebounds. But, you know, Michigan State, you know, struggling throughout that game when trying to find its offense. They didn't give up, though. You know, they don't disappear. Ariel Powers very well could have disappeared. Only 8 points, you know, entering the fourth. And she was also battling some foul trouble as well. You know, even though it's looking at the, you know, her fouls for the game, 3 fouls for her during the game. But, you know, they came in very crucial moments when they needed her. They really needed her on the court. She could have very well disappeared and got discouraged. But that's just not who Ariel Powers is, as you just heard in that montage. I mean, it's winning time. It's winning time. And that's the mindset that Ariel Powers has. It doesn't matter. She can go 0 of 15 entering the fourth quarter. You better believe she's going to chuck up some more shots and try and emotionally rally her team and keep them in position to win. And that's what she did last night. I mean, she had some big buckets. She had one bucket in which, you know, it was a very close game. Brandi Agee, she hits a big three-pointer to give Michigan State the lead. And then Ariel Power, she comes down the court. She comes off a pick, gives a sick right-to-left crossover, drives left-handed, goes in the paint, switches to her right hand, goes off the glass, gets bumped, falls on the ground, and pushes the lead to 3. That's just who Ariel Powers is, folks. Absolutely fantastic. It's a joy to watch her play. If you have not watched Ariel Powers play, you are totally missing out. And going on the defensive end, again, Rutgers, fantastic defensive team. Fantastic defensive team. They helped Michigan State to 59 points. They're holding opponents right now on an average of 55 points game by game. But Michigan State did a fantastic job against Rutgers defensively. You know, they matched them. They were able to match Rutgers' physicality throughout that game, and that was key. That was key, and that's what kept Michigan State in the game. And I also want to shout out Akaya Taylor. This has been back-to-back starts for her in replace of Morgan Green. Morgan Green, a fantastic guard for this squad. She is actually coming off the bench. She came off the bench last night. She was 3 of 4 from the field, 6 points, 4 rebounds. But Akaya Taylor starting. Akaya Taylor has been such a defensive juggernaut for this squad. And I was listening to Susie Merchant during her radio show at Reno's this morning, and she actually has named Akaya Taylor as the defensive captain of this team thus far. That's a position in a position that she has not ever named. That's a new thing that she has implemented this season, Akaya Taylor as the defensive captain. And you can see it. I mean, Akaya Taylor, I mean, my goodness. I mean, she is a pit bull out there. She's that type of player that's going to dive on the floor for loose balls. She's the type of player who's going to out, you know, try and, you know, get physical and out rebound, you know, girls who are you know 2 or 3 inches taller than her. I mean, she was a catalyst of last night's dub, without a doubt. It may not show up in the offensive statistics, but those 8 rebounds she got, you know, 0 points, but those 8 rebounds she got were huge. Simply huge. So I want to give a shout out to Susie Merchant and her squad. They are absolutely rolling right now. 14-4, 5-2 in the Big Ten. Again, that is a half game in back of first place. And they have a big matchup, as I noted in our quick hit headliners. They will actually be taking on Maryland this weekend, just like the MSU men's basketball team will be doing on Saturday. Number 5, Maryland in the nation. Again, that game will take place at 2 p.m. And, I see some parallels, folks. We've been talking about Michigan State's struggles. The MSU men's basketball team, I should say, and their struggles, you know, and how Tom Izzo, I mentioned at the very beginning of this week when Tom Izzo held his weekly press conference, and how Tom Izzo mentioned, you know, the physicality within the men's game and how Tom Izzo has failed in adjusting to the new rules, in being physical. And there's parallels when talking about women's college basketball as well, because that is something that Susie Merchant has had a hard time dealing with. And it's something that, as you heard it in that montage, you heard Susie mention it when discussing Ariel Powers and her foul trouble. But I followed up. I asked a follow-up question to Susie as to how exactly, specifically, how is that hindered her ability to coach the game? And has she done a great job transitioning when it comes to teaching her basketball team the art of being physical without being physical, if that makes any sense? Here she is.
Susie, earlier you mentioned how it's so tough in today's game to sort of be physical while also keeping in mind that the game has changed when it comes to those calls. How tough is it to teach physicality while also keeping in mind that the rules don't allow for much of it?
Yeah, this one was tough. I mean, I just felt like it was very physical inside the paint. I don't know, I'll watch the film or whatever, but I just felt like there was a lot of body in and stuff like that. Yeah, so I felt like it was old school, which was the whole point of the new rules, was to clean that kind of stuff, the heavyweight fights up, you know, freedom of movement, protect the shooter, the ball handler, that kind of thing. So, I don't know, Rutgers plays such a tough style, you know, it's hard to play against, it's hard to emulate in practice, but we've tried to adjust. I mean, I've had to take away one of my all-time favorite ways to play ball screens that I have for years, had to completely eliminate. Because of the hand checking call, which if that's physicality, I guess that's physicality. But what was that? Safety and over. We would forearm and fist, get over the top of the screen, and have safety. But the minute you touch a ball handler now, it's so now we can't do that. We have to, you know, we're hedging a little more, safety and under kids. But like if you're a scorer, that made it difficult. You know, Clarissa Bell was probably the best I've ever had at it, you know, and it just, you didn't have to open your defense up with a hedge. You could really get over the screen. You built a safety net in there. It was a perfect way to guard a ball screen. But now it's a foul. Schiff couldn't play today's rules. But so we've had to completely change and adjust and have several ways that we guard ball screens. We down them, we safety them, we switch them, we hedge them. So we've had to adjust quite a bit on that side of the ball. So that's probably on my end where I've been the most frustrated, because I thought that was, you know, for years that was the best way. Skinny up, forearm and fist, get over it, evade the screen, send them into the screen, safety it, get over so you don't open your D up. Can't do it now. I mean, that's what got us in trouble against Baylor. If you looked at our stat sheet, we had all those kids in foul trouble. Brandy was the only starter out there, and it was because we were safety and over. And I felt like they weren't going to call that, you know, in that game, and they sure did. So I'm like, forget about it. We can't have half our team sitting over here from a silly hand check. So that's the part that frustrates me. Sometimes it's hard for me as a coach to say that's a foul, and then you kind of see sometimes some of the body and in the physicality inside the paint. You know, I've talked to a couple officials that they struggle with that too, you know. I think we spend so much time worrying about a hand check call, we don't really focus on what's going on inside the paint, you know, and the guy that's taking the shot sometimes gets bodied and moved around, and especially if you have an athletic kid. You know, Ariel's very athletic, and she's up in the air, and people are up in her. You know, it's a hard thing, I think, for officials to make that call for some reason, you know, and it's – you know, it is what it is. I'm not saying it didn't cost us the game or anything like that, but it can be a little frustrating at times for sure to know what is and isn't in the spectrum of the physicality of the game now.
Yes, you can certainly say that again, Coach Merchant. I couldn't be a coach in today's college basketball world. I just couldn't. I don't know how you coach just defense in which you can't even touch a defender. I don't know. But nonetheless, hey, her team sits at 14-4, 5-2 in the Big Ten Conference. Again, the Michigan State women's basketball team, they will take on Maryland at College Park at 2 p.m. this Saturday. Fantastic team. I absolutely love Ariel Powers, watching her play. My goodness, she is fantastic, folks. Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Before we transition and move along here on the show, again, we posed our trivia question to you all. And again, the first caller to call in with the correct answer will win a pair of tickets to check out the Michigan State men's basketball team as they take on Nebraska tonight at 6:30 p.m. at the Breslin Center. That trivia question was, looking at Nebraska's recent stretch of wins, three straight for Nebraska dating back to January 9th, which teams did Nebraska beat and what were the final scores of those respective dubs? Right now, we do have a man who thinks he has the right answer on line one. His name is Chris from East Lansing. Chris, welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, brother?
Great. Good to hear from you, Al. This is what I have, the Nebraska Cornhuskers. They've been playing well the last three games. Going back three games, they beat Rutgers 90-56. They beat Minnesota 84-59, and then they beat Illinois 78-67.
You absolutely nailed it, Chris. Congratulations. Again, we'll pass your information along to Isaac, and you'll find out how to pick up those tickets. But, hey, enjoy the game tonight, my friend. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks a lot, Al.
Appreciate that. That's
Bye-bye.
Simple, folks. That's simple. Congratulations to Chris. We appreciate all our listeners out there who call in. And if you don't even call in, but you just listen on a daily basis, we definitely appreciate that. And I also want to shout out, Isaac, very cool moment I had last week when we gave out tickets. I forget what game that was. I want to say it was the – oh, man, what was it? I forget what it was. It was an MSU men's basketball game. But anyway, we had two of our dedicated listeners call in, and they won tickets. I want to give a shout-out to, I believe it was Larry and Reggie. They are dedicated listeners who listen day in and day out. And I had a great chat with them. They said they've been listening for, ever since I've taken the airwaves here at WKAR. And they're workers here at Michigan State, and they listen just about every single day. We chatted, though, for about an hour. About what we do here at WKAR and getting to know them a little bit better. But it's always fantastic anytime I get a chance to interact with our listeners. We really appreciate that. Folks, if you want to still be a part of the show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to invite right now the man behind the glass. We haven't heard from him just yet. Our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. How you doing, Isaac?
Out doing well. A lot of good basketball been on recently, and you mentioned the MSU women's basketball team on a little bit of a roll, and the physicality adjustments that teams have to make, it extends across all areas of basketball now. And you saw kind of the changes be applied to the pro game a few years ago and how much of a difference that made. Because there's always that question, which I like to pose, which is, would this team beat that team? For example, would the 95-96 Bulls beat the Warriors in today's game? And I'd say probably not, but if you were to go back and have the Warriors face the Bulls in 95 or 96, there's no way that the Warriors win that one. So rule changes, they just change the game so dramatically. It's almost hard to compare across those different lines.
Yeah, and you know what? Tom Izzo had an interesting drill this week in preparation for the upcoming game against Nebraska tonight. And, he mentioned how he has failed in teaching his team how to defend and adjusting to the new rules that the college game has implemented. And he implemented a rule, I guess, this week in practice in which he actually tied his players' hands with towels behind their back and had them behind, like, their head as well with the towel. So to make sure that they didn't use their hands at all when guarding a defender, when guarding an offensive player, I should say. And I don't know how that worked out. But, yeah, that's ideally how you got to teach these kids nowadays to play defense in the game of basketball at the college level, because there's no more hand checking. You can't really use your hands at all, not even an arm bar. Like, you can't even use an arm bar like you could back in the 90s and 80s and so on and so forth back in the day, or else it's called a foul now. So it's just so crazy. And I think Susie's comments and the reason I wanted to play that bite, because this is not just – a rule that is implemented in the men's college basketball realm as well, but also the women's game as well. And they've had to adjust too. So, all right, before we hit our first break here, I want to pose this story out there, and I want to get your calls on this, because after we chat with Mike Wilson of 247sports.com, we will be diving into this story and what it means for the future of tennis and the world of sports today. Well, as far as from a perception standpoint, over the last decade, 16 players who have ranked in the top 50 have been repeatedly flagged to the Tennis Integrity Unit, otherwise known as TIU, over suspicions they have thrown matches. all of the players, including winners of Grand Slam titles, were allowed to continue competing. The TIU, which was set up to police the sport, said it had a zero-tolerance approach to betting-related corruption. Chris Kermode, who heads the Association of Tennis Professionals, rejected claims evidence of match-fixing had, quote, been suppressed for any reason or isn't being thoroughly investigated. But he added, quote, while the BBC and BuzzFeed reports mainly refer to events from about 10 years ago, we will investigate any new information. This story is really taking over the sports world, and even big names like Rafael Nadal have been mentioned in the report. Nadal went on to say that he was offered actually money to throw a match, but he didn't even participate in the match and even rejected the offer. Crazy, crazy stuff. So I want to get your thoughts on what this means for the future of tennis and what this means to today's sporting realm. Because it seems as though that, and you could just pick a sport, we see some form of corruption taking place, quote-unquote corruption taking place, whether it be steroids in baseball, whether it be, you know, Deflategate in football, and even this whole steroid thing now with Peyton Manning, you know, and we've seen in the NBA, you know, Tim Donaghy. As a referee, I mean, he was involved in calling certain games to sway in the favor of certain teams, and he was caught and found guilty of that. I mean, it seems to expand into so many sports and really hard to control. What do you think of this story, though? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll talk Michigan State sports with Michigan State sports reporter for 247sports.com, Mike Wilson. That and so much more. You are listening to Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Let's bring on our guest for today's show. This is actually our first time having him on the show. That's crazy, right? Well, his name is Mike Wilson, and he is a Michigan State sports reporter for 247sports.com. Mike, thanks so much for your time this afternoon. How you doing, brother?
I'm happy to be on. Thanks for having me.
Without a doubt, Mike. And now, you know what? Before we dive into the Michigan State men's basketball team and get your thoughts on the stretch they've been on, again, back-to-back losses, they host Nebraska tonight at 6:30 p.m. at the Breslin Center. I want to talk MSU football with you just briefly here, because we saw a story yesterday that we talked about for a pretty good length of time during yesterday's show, and that concerns Detroit Cass Tech offensive lineman Michael Onwenu posting on his Twitter that the Spartans have actually offered him. Now, I believe that Mike actually, he committed to Michigan earlier in 2015, but he posted on his Twitter with a picture accounted with the tweet of the Block S saying, quote, blessed to announce I've just received an offer from Michigan State, hashtag Spartans. And I believe that you actually reported that he plans to take an official visit to MSU this weekend. Mike, how surprising was this for you?
It is and it isn't. He's a guy that obviously Michigan State's known about for a long time. Just didn't really get around to offering for whatever reason. Must have liked what they saw as a senior. I hit Mike up after I saw the offer and just said, hey, you know, are you going to visit or are you not thinking that? He's like, yeah, I'm going to take one this weekend. And, I mean, that's big boy recruiting. I mean, that's Michigan's. They know. I'm sure they're not unaware that's happening. And at the same time, they probably feel confident this visit won't change anything. So, but yeah, that's the world of recruiting these days.
Without a doubt. And you know what? Again, he's 6'3", 367 pounds. He's a guard. He has been committed to Michigan, the only in-state player committed to U of M in the 2016 class since June 2nd of 2015. So, you know, with that being said, I mean, I feel like in the world of recruiting, we see so many times, you know, kids who are still debating on where they want to go. They may say, hey, yeah, this is my place. But when another offer comes from elsewhere, they say, all right, well, maybe I want to think about this. I mean, how common is this? Because I feel like I'm reading about a story like this where a kid is committed initially to one spot, but then decides to say, you know what, maybe I need to think about this. How common is this in your world, Mike?
I mean, it happens. It's kind of a byproduct of the way that recruiting is done now, where offers are sent out to freshmen and sophomores, sophomores and juniors commit. And it's a long way before they ultimately are able to sign paperwork and say, yeah, this is where I'm going. So they continue to be recruited. They might get better. They might plateau. So it can come from the school's end or the player's end. And it's just the way it goes. I mean, yeah, it's a byproduct of the fact that kids commit early. There's a lot of time then for them to look around and be expected to honor that commitment. So it happens because of that as much as anything.
Very, very true. So he will be in town, as you reported, this week, and I'm assuming what he's attending the MSU and Maryland game?
I would assume that's part of it, yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Now, Mike, what's your takeaway from this past MSU football season? Of course, you were in the house to witness what Coach Mark D'Antonio had to say during his end-of-the-year presser. What were your takeaways from that presser, and what do you think this past year for the MSU football team will be remembered for?
My takeaway was that the Cotton Bowl loss might be harder than any loss he's tried to get over. You saw a guy who has rewatched the game, I think he said 7.5 times. His wife told him to let it go. I think this one hit hard. I think they expected that game to go a lot differently, and it didn't. So I see a guy that took that one to heart, and that one's going to linger. That one's going to be a driving force for a while. But when you look back at the season, it's hard to say, you know, the mantra was reach higher, and I've had people say, well, they didn't do that. But of course they did. They reached the playoffs. That's something they've never done before. But you look at a team that had a lot of injuries, won a lot of close games, went through a lot of things. I actually might argue they overachieved compared to where they should have been. Mm-hmm. They won with a lot of holes on this team, and they made it to the playoff with that. So I think that speaks highly of the team in the end.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Mike. Now, what do you foresee now with the offseason taking place for this squad? What do you think is going to be the biggest storyline coming into next year? Because I think I have a pretty good guess.
I think anyone has a pretty good guess, and it's going to start a quarterback.
Right, exactly, right?
Yeah, you're replacing a three-year starter with uncertainty and a bunch of guys in that mix, but I'd also throw a wide receiver and defensive line right into that mix because there's a lot of bodies gone at both of those places too.
When evaluating that quarterback battle, which will be, of course, between Tyler O'Connor, Damian Terry, primarily, who knows? Maybe another name may be in the mix. We never know with the world of sports. But, you know, those two being the leaders right now, who do you think has the edge in this whole battle?
Goodness gracious.
I know, I'm putting you on the spot.
It's hard to pinpoint. Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint without seeing them go head-to-head this spring. Mm-hmm. We saw Tyler O'Connor got the nod at Ohio State. So from that, you might conclude to say, okay, well, he was the number two quarterback this year. But Damian Terry played in that game, and they're very different players. So it's a toss-up. And to me, if you come out of spring ball and it's a close competition, I like the idea of starting Damian Terry because that's a guy who's going to start for 2 years then instead of one. Mm-hmm. And you get an extra year of value out of that. So it's going to be really interesting to watch this spring, though.
Breaking down what both of them bring to the table, I mean, what sort of quarterbacks are these two?
I think Tyler O'Connor is certainly mobile, not as mobile as Damian Terry, who's known as that athlete, guy can get out of the pocket, make plays. I mean, they brought him in a lot of different sets this year. So in that, I think people see Tyler O'Connor as more of the passing quarterback, but Terry showed that he can do the same thing. So I think when you look at O'Connor, you see more of an experienced game manager type. There's some potential with Terry to maybe make some more plays. Not to say that Tyler O'Connor can't, because he had some big runs against Ohio State to keep moving the chains and set up that touchdown on a Michael Geiger field goal as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very true. Mike Wilson, Michigan State sports reporter for 247sports.com. Mike, Shalique Calhoun, Jack Allen, Connor Cook's, you know, endeavors to go to the next level, to go to the NFL. Where do you think those three will land in this upcoming NFL draft? And how much success do you think they will have in pro football?
They're all interesting players with obvious strengths and obvious limitations as well. I mean, I think most people would expect that Connor Cook's the first of those three to get drafted sometime in the first or second round. As far as a team landing spot goes, I've thought for a while a team like Dallas or Kansas City would be a wonderful fit for him from an offensive standpoint as well as a veteran quarterback to learn from standpoint. Mm. So those are two that I've liked the idea of for him for a while. As for Shalique, I think you'd see him be the next guy off the board. For just his speed rush ability, I think he's got to add a little bit of the strength to the game, a little bit more finesse, because he made his money in college, well, made his name in college as a speed rush guy off the edge. And then Jack Allen, I mean, his limitation is going to be his size, and anyone is going to say that. But he's proven to be tough as nails, go up against bigger guys. So, out of the three, I think you see potential for all of them having nice careers. Jack might have a harder time sticking just because of the size thing. But if he gets in there and shows the team what he can do, he's certainly got a shot as much as anyone.
Now, Mike, you also got the chance to talk with a few of the MSU football early enrollees. Who'd you chat with and who had the most lasting impression on you?
I chatted with all seven of them that were there that day, actually. Bounced around like a pinball. And I think the one that the media walked away from saying, like, man, that was a fun interview was Mookie Hunt. A lot of personality to him. Very free, joking, and it was just kind of a pleasure to talk to. I think Cam Chambers was another guy that was engaging. Messiah DeWeaver certainly has that too. But all of them had funny little whimsical-type comments, and were all relatively comfortable with the moment. I think in part because all of them were decently high recruits and have dealt with the recruiting coverage that goes in there now. So they were all pretty comfortable with the media, which is a nice thing.
Mike, how do you put in perspective? Because, you know, success certainly breeds attention. And, you know, the Michigan State football team, I mean, they won a Rose Bowl. They've won a Cotton Bowl in beating Baylor. They went to the college football playoff this past season. And, you know, to see the type of attention that this team has garnered from those top recruits in the nation and getting that talent and getting that fruition to their respective program, I mean, what's it been like to witness what Coach D has done here and the type of success that he's had primarily in these past few years?
From a recruiting standpoint, I think the most telling thing is the way that this month has gone. Usually for Michigan State, January is a month where they're picking up 5-6 guys that are under the radar, had a good senior season, or late offers. And a guy like Darquez Denard was late in the process. Le'Veon Bell was late in the process. Mm-hmm. Those guys were late, close to signing day. But Michigan State basically filled up their class last May, June. I mean, they had all the guys they pretty much wanted then, and there hasn't been a ton of change since then. And to me, that's as telling as anything of the way that this program has succeeded. They got attention on the recruiting trail, and kids jumped in early, not wanting to miss out on playing East Lansing. So to me, from a strictly recruiting standpoint, that's how I see that success.
Without a doubt. All right, let's transition. Let's talk about the hardwood now. Tom Izzo and the MSU men's basketball team are trying to shake off back-to-back losses in the Big Ten Conference. Of course, they fell to Iowa on January 14th. A 76-59 loss there, and this past weekend against Wisconsin on the road, a 77-76 heartbreaker as time expired. They have a chance to redeem itself tonight versus Nebraska at home, a 6:30 p.m. tip. Mike, what do you say to those fans out there that are sort of panicking for this MSU men's basketball team? Because it's certainly way too early to do that, but there are many fans that have even expressed that on our airwaves that don't really believe in this team right now. But, hey, this is Tom Izzo at the end of the day. What's your message to those fans out there that have that perception?
I mean, I would say they're 16-3. I think that's where things start. It's easy to have the sky is falling mentality when the team gets blown out by Iowa twice in the span of a couple weeks and loses at Wisconsin. They've obviously had a pretty good start to the season, better than last year when they made the Final Four. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a concern with this team that it's time to toughen up. I think it's been pretty clear that they get pushed around. I wrote it after the Iowa game that, you know, you're watching that game and you're seeing a typical team on that floor, tough defense, rebounding. But the problem was that was Iowa. That wasn't Michigan State. And that to me was as telling as anything about this group that really needs to get down to the nitty gritty and say, all right, are we a tough team or not? Because they're going to need to be the rest of the season.
What's really been the difference maker in these last two games, more so, Mike, that have led to back-to-back losses for MSU? We know the toughness is something clearly that this team needs to get right. And it's so weird that we're saying that because usually that's been a staple of Tom Izzo men's basketball programs. They are tough. That's numero uno, if anything. But what other glaring differences have really led to this tough stretch of basketball for this squad?
I found Monday's practice as telling as anything. You know, Tom Izzo went in Monday and said, we're going to tie our players' hands above their heads behind their backs with towels.
Right.
Well, he didn't go that extreme. The players did have towels in both hands held above their heads. They're working on not fouling. I mean, they're losing games at the free throw line right now. Wisconsin had a 17-point advantage at the free throw line, and they won by one. I mean, Izzo rattled off Monday all the stats and all the various things that basically were, hey, you put those stats together, you win that game nearly every time. But when you give up that many free throws, you lose it. So they've got to improve there. So it comes back to that defense. They need to be better guarding the perimeter. That's kind of the weakness they've had for most of the year. And it's a bigger issue now with Tum Tum Nayer on the bench.
How big of a loss is Tum Tum, Mike?
The issue most people have, I think, when they look at Tum Tum and try to describe how big of a loss he is to say, well, he doesn't score much.
Right.
But on the other end, he is their best perimeter defender. He's their best fast break, push up the court. He gets to the hoop sometimes, a little hesitant with that, no doubt. But his defense is something that they sorely miss. Matt McQuaid's the guy that got in there now, and he's not Tum-Tum defensive. No one else on this team is. So that's where you see a drop-off, and that's where it's a big loss.
Now, Mike, I want to get your thoughts on this as well because this has also been a big discussion this week here on the show. And it's something that you just mentioned. Again, the rule change. Tom Izzo mentioned during this week's press conference that he has failed in teaching his team how to adjust to the new rules that college basketball has implemented, which is really, you know, for you know, all puns intended here, tied his hands behind his back when teaching how his kids should play defense. How bad do you think the new rule changes in today's college basketball, how bad do you think it's hurting the product, if at all? What are your thoughts on it?
I think it does ruin – it's not as strong of a brand, but I think the bigger issue with it all is the lack of consistency in officiating. Mm-hmm. I watched that Kansas-Oklahoma triple overtime game earlier this year, which I thought was very well officiated. There was contact. There weren't the same volume of hand-check fouls being called. And I thought that game was much more enjoyable to watch. I don't think many people could look at Sunday's game and say, oh, yeah, that was a good game of basketball. It was thrilling. I mean, the final few minutes were very exciting. Mm-hmm. But that was not a good game of basketball. I don't think people tune in to watch 60 free throw games. That's not a good product to see.
Right,
but
right.
That's where I think it's an issue to me.
Definitely. And like I said, it's tough to sit down and watch, you know, games in which, again, like you said, I mean, watching 50, 60 free throws a game, it gets really ridiculous. All right, so talking about tonight's matchup, Nebraska, a team that is pretty hot right now, back-to-back-to-back wins for them over Rutgers, Minnesota, and Illinois. Again, they will be taking on the Spartans at the Breslin, a 6:30 p.m. tip time. Mike, what do you expect from tonight's game against Nebraska, and what kind of team is Nebraska? What makes them so good?
They're well coached. I mean, Tim Miles is a good coach. Siobhan Shield is their perimeter guy that makes them go, and he's been around for a while now. Different team than the past 2 years where there's no Jaron Pettaway, who's kind of playing hero ball a lot of the game. Mm-hmm. So they do things a little bit differently now. But to me, Michigan State's got to go into this game and prove something. And if they don't come in there with that attitude, I think then the concerns that you're seeing from people become a little bit more pronounced and warranted. So I look for Michigan State to go in there and try to say, hey, this is who we want to be. This is who we are. We need to bounce back from this. Have a performance that puts some confidence in ourselves and confidence in people around us.
It's going to be very fun to watch. Again, tip time, 6:30 p.m. tonight. Mike Wilson, Michigan State sports reporter for 247sports.com. Mike, how can people out there read your work tonight and furthermore?
At michiganstate.247sports.com or spartantailgate.com.
You can also follow Mike on Twitter at MikeWilson247. Mike, thanks so much for your time. I'll see you tonight.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will chat about that MSU men's basketball game versus Nebraska. You'll get Isaac and I's thoughts on this game tonight. Also, Tony Poljan committing to Central Michigan University. That and more. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Just about, 10 minutes left in the show, or under 10 minutes left in the show. I want to remind you all that, hey, Current Sports TV tapes tonight at 6 p.m. at the WKAR TV studios here on the campus of Michigan State University. That's the first floor of the Communication Arts and Sciences building. I'll be chatting with Jarrett Walker, AIM High Sports Complex Assistant Manager. Jared has done one outstanding job when it comes to organizing youth sporting events there for many years, and he's going to talk about how he got involved with AIM High and the state of youth sports today. So if you want to be a part of that live studio audience, all you have to do is sign up at WKAR.org. Brief thoughts on this, Isaac. Again, over the last decade, 16 players who have ranked in the top 50 have been repeatedly flagged to the Tennis Integrity Unit, the TIU, over suspicions that they have thrown matches. I gave sort of a synopsis of some of the names that have been involved in this report, including, Rafael Nadal coming out, I believe it was last week, talking about how he was even approached by individuals that, you know, we would give you about $100,000, you know, if you threw this match. You know, at whatever respective tournament he was playing in. I mean, how concerned are you when discussing how big this story can become?
I'm very concerned because when you see the scope of allegations of doping or allegations of blackmail or, you know, of throwing matches in other sports, sometimes it extends all the way to the top of the pyramid. So that's what worries me about this report, this accusation against the sport of tennis by the TIU. So it is extremely troublesome, and tennis more so than other sports. Tennis is a match which is one-on-one. I mean, if you ultimately determine the outcome of the game, nobody else does. It's not like a team game where you can have an off night and still have your team prevail, even if you're trying to lose as an individual. As a referee, there's only so much you can do. As an individual playing another individual, all the power's in your hands. You control the destiny of that game. So I think it's really troubling for tennis, and I'm worried about how far this could go.
And you know what? There's one thing that really stands out to me. I mentioned the TIU and how they are, again, the Tennis Integrity Unit, and how they are in charge of making sure that if there is any suspicion of any wrongdoing here, that they look into it. I mean, you know, they were alerted repeated times. Repeated alerts were sent to the TIU for about a third of these players. Again, like up towards 30 players involved in this whole report. And none of them were disciplined by the TIU or even followed up or investigated. So that's the big problem here. The TIU didn't follow up when it comes to these situations. Now, again, on Monday, Novak Djokovic, he even weighed in on a situation in which he was involved in back in 2007. He spoke about an experience that he had. Djokovic said people who worked with him were asked if he would accept tens of thousands of dollars to fix a match. He says he did not accept the proposal. He said fixing a match would be a crime. Quote, I don't support it. I think there's no room for it in any sport, especially in the world of tennis. It made me feel terrible because I don't want to be linked to this kind of, you know, somebody may call it an opportunity, he said. Djokovic said that he thinks the recent media reports are about matches that took place almost 10 years ago. He said active players are not involved. And he said he does not believe there is corruption among the sport's top players. You better believe we'll have more on this one as the week rolls along. But very, very disturbing stuff, to say the least. All right, tonight, the MSU men's basketball team, they will again try to rebound from back-to-back losses in the Big Ten schedule, and they will host Nebraska at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. Both Isaac and myself, we will be in the house to cover that game. Again, we will have post-game coverage of that one a little bit after the game, you know, the dust clears in that game. You can catch my post-game report on WKAR.org. Interesting, though, because Nebraska, as I've been mentioning throughout the show, Isaac, even when our chat with Mike Wilson, Nebraska is coming off of three straight dubs, Rutgers, Minnesota, and Illinois. It's not, you know, what surprises me is not so much that they've beaten those teams, but when looking at by how much they've beaten those teams by. I mean, you know, Nebraska beat the Scarlet Knights by 34 points, the Gophers by 25. They're led offensively by Kansas transfer Andrew White III, a bulky 6'7 wing who averages better than 17 points and 6 rebounds. Senior Siobhan Shields, another lanky player. He's also 6'7". He can rate his own shot. Freshman guard Glenn Watson Jr., 17 points in the last game, keying that win against the Illini. Very, very interesting. But the thing is, Nebraska still hasn't had that one win you can look at and say, okay, that was very, very impressive. You beat that team. They're looking for that signature win, if you will. And if they get it over Michigan State tonight, that will be that dub that they can point to that to say, okay, well, we're legit. We're legit. Now, and that's why I think Nebraska is going to come out with the eye of the tiger, not complacent whatsoever. And Michigan State is going to have a chip on its shoulder because looking at the last two games and how they've lost, this has the recipe to be a very fun and entertaining matchup.
Yes, it does. And the other thing about Nebraska is they've, throughout the year, and you mentioned it, continually gotten better. The conference record, I mean, they won their last three in conference. And before that, you saw them progress before conference matchups started up. Northwestern, Indiana, Iowa, those are their three losses. That's not a bad slate of games to say, okay, yes, we lost to them. But what I think Michigan State needs to do today is pound the ball inside. Matt Castell, 4 of 6 games, he scored 15 or more points in the last 6. So I think Michigan State needs to ride him hard. Nebraska's top shot blocker only averages 0.7 blocks per game. 0.7, that's nothing. And that's Ed Morrow Jr. So if I'm Michigan State, I'm going inside. I'm letting Matt Castell lead his senior class and the rest of his fellow classmates and basketball teammates to the locker room with a dub this time around and cut out this current streak.
Yeah, I really think that Michigan State's depth is going to be the X factor in this game. And Michigan State coming off 2 losses, emotions are going to be high. I expect a big game from Denzel Valentine. I think Bryn Forbes is going to shoot the lights out the basketball. And I think Matt Costello will continue his streak of outstanding play. Again, that game is tonight. Again, at 6:30 p.m., we'll have post-game coverage for you after that one is said and done. And I really like, just really brief here, brief thoughts on Tony Poljan committing to CMU. I think he made the right move, especially considering that he wants to play the quarterback position. Thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Congratulations to Chris from East Lansing for winning a pair of tickets to check out the Spartans tonight. And thanks to Mike Wilson of 247sports.com. Have a fantastic afternoon. Take care. Same place, same time tomorrow. Be easy, people.